Well, welcome back, everyone. I can see everyone's had a good lunch from the buffet in the foyer, as we call it up there. And I now have the pleasure of introducing our luncheon speaker, who is someone who goes back with President Obama not quite as far as Norm Eisen, a previous luncheon speaker at our programs here. Norm Eisen had been on Law Review with President Obama. But our next speaker just confided with me that Professor Obama was one of the best professors she ever had. And certainly here at a law school, that's the type of thing we would like to hear. Lisa Ellman is currently senior counsel in the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. That's OIRA for short, at OMB. And prior to that, she was at the Department of Justice, my old agency, in the Office of Legal Policy. She also served as White House Legal Director in the White House Office of Personnel. And prior to that, she was Deputy Agency Review Director for the Obama-Biden Transition Team, which means we have two Obama-Biden Transition Team officials here today, Frank Reeder this morning being the first. And prior to that, she practiced law at a local law firm, Mayer Brown, Raw and Moore. And what's maybe competitively significant with the fact that she knew President Obama back during her law school days is that she also has co-authored a book with Professor Cass Sunstein, who is the head of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs and the person who's very well positioned by dint of background, intelligence, and connection and experience to move mountains in the direction in which people would want those mountains to move. So please help me welcome our luncheon speaker, Lisa Ellman.
Thank you, Dan. And thank you, Open Government friends and colleagues. It is great to be here. Thank you for having me. As I know you've talked about much of the morning, progress is never easy. It comes slowly. But we have made great strides, and we will continue to do so working together. I am here today to talk about the importance of open government to President Obama and to this administration. After highlighting the open government principles that guide this administration, I will give a brief overview of a few of the administration's efforts towards forging a more open relationship between citizens and government over the last few years, and then talk about the Open Government Partnership in our United States National Action Plan. As Dan noted in his kind introduction, and just to give you some more background on where I fit in, I work at the Office of Management and Budget, and I'm specifically in charge of implementing our National Action Plan on Open Government, along with a few of my colleagues who are here with me as well, Remington Gregg and Nick Frazier. Thanks for being here. And so that's what I will focus on here today, since that's what I know most about. I will close by asking for your help as we move forward. From day one of this administration, President Obama has worked to create an unprecedented level of openness in government. The cause of open government is a priority for this administration. I have been working for the president for the last 5 years, and as Dan mentioned, before then, he was my constitutional law professor and my mentor at the University of Chicago. So I know his work in Illinois and as senator and now, and I have seen firsthand his steadfast commitment to these issues over the years. Indeed, when we think of the monumental tasks that the president faced on his first day in office, the fact that open government played a key role in the early days is a testament of its importance to this administration. On day one, in his memorandum on transparency and open government, the president stated, "Openness will strengthen our democracy and promote efficiency and effectiveness in government." There are two keys here: strengthening our democracy and promoting efficiency and effectiveness in government. And these are pretty big aspirations. The vehicles for fulfilling these goals include greater transparency, participation, and collaboration. My colleague Steve Crowley laid out these open government principles when he spoke to you this time last year. so I will not tread on old territory. But these are the questions that my colleagues and I ask ourselves, each other, and you every day. How do we turn these words into reality? How do we implement our plans and turn them into results? How, in practice, do we create a stronger democracy and a more efficient and effective government? Solving these questions are what motivate Cass Sunstein, Chris Vian, Steve Crowley, myself, and all of our colleagues to come into the office every morning. Now, President Obama has not promoted open government simply as an abstract proposition. He has required his administration to set tangible goals and to achieve real results. I am going to focus on what we did over the last year. But first, I will start by doing a quick overview of some of our key open government accomplishments over the first 2 years. On his first full day in office, the President issued a memorandum calling for a presumption in favor of disclosure under the Freedom of Information Act. On the very same day, he issued a memorandum on openness in general, calling for new measures to promote transparency, participation, and collaboration. He directed agency heads to harness new technology and to engage the public by disclosing information rapidly and giving citizens a voice in how decisions are made. The Office of Management and Budget, through issuing the Open Government Directive, required agencies both to take immediate specific steps and establish long-term goals to achieve greater openness and transparency. Agencies developed open government plans of their own and made unprecedented amounts of information available and easily accessible. In the first 2 years, the White House established a clear presumption in favor of transparency. The administration has shined light on federal spending. Agencies have taken important steps to provide more disclosure of sensitive government information. And for the first time in history, the White House now posts visitor logs, salaries, and ethics waivers online, which I know that you will be discussing at a later panel later today. And the administration took a number of additional steps, from putting into place sweeping ethics standards to making new data available online. Because information is power, data.gov now gives the public access to almost 400,000 high-value agency data sets on such diverse subjects as auto safety, air travel, air quality, workplace safety, drug safety, nutrition, crime, obesity, employment, and healthcare. We are informing consumers in many of these areas as well by promoting the use of disclosure as a low-cost, high-impact regulatory tool to ensure informed decisions. Now, since I am speaking at an event called Transparency in the Obama Administration, my remarks on the National Action Plan and open government generally will focus on our efforts to bring greater transparency to government. But it is important to note that we hold all three values, transparency, participation, and collaboration, as equal and important goals. And this is reflected in the work that we do. I am now going to talk about our work of the last year. Building on the work of the first 2.5 years, the United States Open Government National Action Plan, launched as part of the Open Government Partnership, utilizes the tools of transparency, participation, and collaboration, and further embraces technology and innovation to tackle several key challenges facing our country today. Many of you in this room may have witnessed the historic launch of the Open Government Partnership last year in New York. It began in 2010 when President Obama challenged countries around the world, including ours, to come back in 2011 with specific commitments to strengthen the foundations of freedom in our countries, to develop plans of action to promote transparency, fight corruption, energize civil society, and leverage new technologies. And 1 year later, the Open Government Partnership, a group of governments and civil society organizations spanning the globe, is already transforming how governments around the world serve their citizens in the 21st century. On the margins of the 2011 United Nations General Assembly, the President stood with President Rousseff of Brazil to launch the partnership, as well as our own National Action Plan on Open Government, in front of heads of state and senior officials from 46 other countries. While the action plan itself consists of concrete, tangible commitments, the President spoke broadly in his remarks about the importance of open government and the essence of democracy, stating that our countries are all stronger when we engage citizens beyond the halls of government. The National Action Plan commitments are organized within the plan according to the key challenge that they are designed to address, but all of them include elements of transparency, participation, and collaboration. Before talking about the substance of the plan, I'd like to note that the depth and breadth of this plan, which was widely and enthusiastically praised by civil society organizations and the public alike, is a perfect example of what we can do as a country when we, the people in this room, work together. It resulted from the hard work not just of the administration, but of people in this room and citizens around the country who submitted ideas and suggestions. In other words, the plan reflects your commitment to these issues just as much as it reflects ours.
Lisa, let me mention quickly something that you might not know, but you might be interested to know. That plan in its entirety is one of the handouts of this program, so everyone here has that plan. You could make reference to any particular part of it and know that they'll be able to play along.
Excellent.
So to speak.
I will do that because we are going to review what's in the plan. Thank you. I think that they were on the table outside if you hadn't picked it up. Thank you, Dan. So you joined us not as spectators in this effort, but as equal partners. As many of you recall, we met several times to get ideas as we were drafting the plan from a broad range of civil society groups, academics, and members of the private sector. We engaged the public via a series of blog posts, and we solicited input from the administration's own open government interagency working group. The National Action Plan is a symbol of what can happen when we work together productively, a success story of the collaboration that we want to continue to have, which can lead to real and important change. All in this room should feel proud that our National Action Plan is being used as a model for nearly 40 other nations who are now developing their own commitments, which they will launch at the next annual Open Government Partnership meeting in Brasilia this April. Before highlighting the progress that we've made on a few important initiatives and asking for your continued help moving forward, I will provide a brief overview of what's in the plan. And if you have an actual physical copy of the plan, you can follow along. First, to promote public participation in government, the White House launched a We the People petition platform, as well as its plans to publish its source code to make it available to any government around the world that seeks to solicit and respond to the concerns of the public. I'll talk more about the success of this initiative in a moment. The plan also includes a commitment to identify best practices and metrics for public participation, so we can assess progress toward the President's goal of becoming more participatory in how decisions are made. To increase public integrity, we committed to modernizing records management policies and practices across the executive branch, because strong records management is the backbone of a transparent and accountable government. We announced our intention to build on the last 2 years of progress by continuing to improve FOIA administration, as well as declassification and enforcement and compliance data transparency efforts, and to monitor and improve implementation of agency open government plans. We vowed to work to strengthen and expand whistleblower protections, because employees with the courage to report wrongdoing are our government's best defense against waste, fraud, and abuse. And we committed to work to increase the transparency of legal entities formed in the United States as part of a broader strategy to safeguard the international financial system from abuse. To more effectively manage public resources, the President announced the United States' intent to join the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative as an implementing country, forging a new partnership between government, civil society, and industry to ensure that taxpayers receive every dollar they are due from the extraction of our natural resources. We committed to increase transparency in spending, to release and implement government-wide reporting requirements for foreign aid, and to improve government performance and accountability by improving performance.gov. Finally, in an effort to improve public services, the United States pledged to expand public participation in the development of regulations by overhauling the public participation interface on regulations.gov. ContributeData.gov is a platform to other countries, foster communities on data.gov, encourage communication between government officials and citizen experts, reform government websites, promote smart disclosure by publishing data to help consumers and scientists, and promote innovation through international collaboration. Now, there's a lot there, and we are going to need your help in implementing these 26 commitments. But before talking about next steps, I'd like to give a brief overview of a few commitments where we have already made good progress, specifically with regard to We the People, Records Management, FOIA, EITI, and Foreign Assistance Transparency. I mentioned We the People just a few minutes ago. Throughout our history, Americans have used petitions as a way to join together around issues that they care about. We the People is our attempt to bring that uniquely American tradition into the 21st century. It is a new online tool that allows Americans to directly petition the White House and ask the administration to take action on a range of issues. And where signature thresholds have been met, the administration has a responsibility to answer the petition. In just over 3 months, we've had strong participation in We the People on a range of issues, ranging from civil rights and liberties to the economy and immigration, to transportation and education, to criminal justice and regulatory reform. More than 1.25 million people have created WhiteHouse.gov accounts in order to participate in the platform. More than 23,000 petitions have been created. 1.8 million petition signatures have been logged. And 86 petitions have crossed the signature threshold to receive a response. As of this week, 52 petitions have received an official response from the administration, and 34 petition responses are in the works. Here's an example that relates directly to our work together on open government. Just today, the White House is responding to two We the People petitions inquiring about the Yes We Scan movement and promoting a national effort to digitize all public records. We are posting a response from the Archivist of the United States stating the administration's support for this idea and the need for a national strategy to figure out how to make this a reality. The response contains a host of questions for the drafters of the petitions and for the public asking for input on how to proceed on this important open government deliverable. Now, I'll talk more about our progress on records management in a moment. But this is a great example of how We the People, how the We the People petition platform is giving the public an opportunity to collaborate with the White House on the issues that matter to them, including on important open government issues, in this case, records management. Now, we remain committed to improving the platform, and in response to civil society implementation recommendations, which I believe are also there's a document of the civil society recommendations on implementation, I believe, are also on the table outside.
Yes, that's also a hand up.
Great. In response to those recommendations, I am committing here that we will post an annual report describing what happened to each of the petitions that were publicly searchable on the We the People platform, meaning that they got at least 150 signatures in 30 days.
That sounds like breaking news for any of the reporters in the room. I know there's one from the Associated Press in particular.
Well, we're committing to do that here. We also plan to publish a six-month progress report on the White House blog that summarizes our progress to date, including key lessons learned. Another presidential priority highlighted in the plan, and one in which we have made great progress, which I just mentioned, is records management. Records document evidence of agency action and decisions. Strong records management is key to promoting the legitimacy of government and to enable citizens to hold government officials accountable for their actions. On November 28, 2011, the President took the most significant steps since the Truman administration to improve the management of federal records. He signed and issued a presidential memorandum that directs agencies to move to a digital-based records-keeping system, a move that will save taxpayer dollars, promote accountability, and increase government transparency. The process will help move the federal record system into the digital age so that the American people have access to clear and accurate information about the decisions taken by the federal government. And in a key provision, the President required his administration to consult with those inside and outside the government, including public stakeholders interested in improving records management and open government. The next initiative I want to talk about is the President's commitment to continue to improve FOIA administration. This statute is a vital part of our democracy. In addition to presumptive disclosure and encouraging agencies to take proactive steps to make information available to the public, DOJ's new FOIA dashboard now enables users to assess FOIA compliance for the nearly 100 agencies subject to FOIA. In our national action plan, we pledge to continue to improve FOIA administration by professionalizing FOIA administration and harnessing the power of technology, and we have made good progress in this regard. First, to afford agencies the ability to respond in a timely fashion, modifications have been made to the GSA contract schedules. These schedules now include a soup-to-nuts menu of services and personnel to aid agencies in any type of document production, including FOIA. And to enhance the public's ability to locate all of the material that is being made available, DOJ recently added a search tool to FOIA.gov. This tool searches across all federal government websites and reaches not just those documents that have been released in response to previous FOIA requests, but also the proactive disclosures that agencies are making throughout their websites. This search tool will make the search for information easier by helping requesters know exactly what is online and what is not. They may find that there is no need to even make a FOIA request given the material that is already readily available. And if there is still a need to make a request, this tool will make it so that requesters can draft a more precise FOIA request. Another significant commitment that the administration made in the National Action Plan was to continue our leadership of the global effort against corruption by committing to join the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, an initiative bringing together industry, government, and civil society to work together for greater transparency. EITI, as it is called, has developed a voluntary framework under which companies publish what they pay to obtain access to publicly owned resources, and governments disclose what they receive from oil, gas, and mining assets. We all know that the United States is a major developer of natural resources. By signing on to the global standard that EITI sets, the United States government can help ensure that American taxpayers are receiving every dollar due for the extraction of these valuable public resources. These voluntary disclosures are designed to foster integrity and accountability when it comes to the development of the world's natural resources. And we continue to make good progress on this commitment. In October, the White House announced that Department of the Interior Secretary Ken Salazar would be the senior administration official responsible for oversight of implementation of EITI. Our next step is formation of the multi-stakeholder group, which we are working with civil society and industry to do. And civil society organizations have recommended in their same document that we commit to the U.S. government to conducting a full inventory of existing and evolving EITI reporting practices and standards internationally, and I can commit to doing that here. Now, the President made clear in the National Action Plan that it is but one more step in our open government work. It is not the end of the story. And as evidence of this, one area in which we have gone significantly farther than we pledged to go to in the National Action Plan is in the area of foreign assistance transparency. Transparency of foreign aid is essential for the efficient and effective use of resources. In our National Action Plan, we pledged to release and implement government-wide reporting requirements for foreign aid. Directing agencies that administer foreign assistance to provide detailed information on budgets, disbursements, and project implementation. And because this information is held in hundreds of different places, the White House created foreignassistance.gov, a one-stop dashboard that anyone can use to see how American foreign aid dollars are being spent. To further support the international aid transparency effort and to promote effective development by helping recipient governments manage the aid that they received, Secretary Clinton recently announced that the United States government would join the International Aid Transparency Initiative, publishing our data in an open, up-to-date, and internationally compatible format. USAID Administrator Raj Shah spoke about this at the Transparency Conference this week at Brookings. We're currently in the process of piloting geotagging of our USAID projects in selected countries. And our vision is that anyone with an internet connection would be able to pull up a Google map to help find out exactly what schools their tax dollars helped build and what wells their money helped dig. In the foreign aid context, we can see that the administration is going beyond the transparency commitments that we made in the National Action Plan. We've made great progress on other initiatives as well. The development process for identifying best practices and metrics for public participation is underway. To combat government secrecy, the National Declassification Center is working hard toward its goal of declassification processing of the 400 million page backlog identified 2 years ago. Related to this, we've also been moving forward on the Controls Unclassified Information effort. And you can hear more about that from the NARA representative who is participating on the next panel. I know that Patrice mentioned that earlier today.
There are two of them who will be participating, and they're in the back row smiling at you right now, Lisa.
Excellent. Glad that you're here. The National Dialogue on Improving Federal Websites was conducted late last year. We've also made good progress on the Smart Disclosure Initiative, giving consumers access to interactive decision tools that help them make wiser choices. For example, the Department of Veterans Affairs gave a boost to job seekers by giving them access to their military records online in a format that highlighted skills related to civilian jobs. And the IRS recently announced that it will develop an application to enable a taxpayer to securely send a verified digital copy of their prior year tax information to an authorized third party through IRS.gov. On innovation, we committed in the National Action Plan to contribute data.gov as a platform through the U.S.-India Open Government Dialogue to encourage governments around the world to stand up open data sites that promote transparency, improve citizen engagement, and engage application developers in continuously improving these efforts. The United States team has since deposited the open source code for the open government platform, and this is an important benchmark. We also committed to expand the number of data.gov communities that connect data related to particular subject matters with users and producers of that data. Just yesterday, education.data.gov was launched, serving as a central guide for education data resources, including applications for the classroom. Not to be outdone, communities for public safety and research and development are in the works. And I could go on, but the important thing to note is that it is apparent that open government, transparency, participation, and collaboration remains a serious administration commitment, and we are working hard to achieve our shared goals every day. We stand with you, we appreciate you, and we are looking forward to continuing to working with you. Now, as I mentioned earlier, civil society organizations have submitted recommendations with ideas on how best to implement the National Action Plan. We are taking these ideas seriously, and we are meeting with interested groups on individual initiatives. Just this week, we met with civil society groups to discuss implementation of the Beneficial Ownership Initiative and foreign assistance transparency. We will continue to meet with civil society groups and to engage with the public as we work to implement the initiatives in our National Action Plan. We have committed to hold general National Action Plan implementation meetings once per quarter, as well as individual meetings with those responsible for particular initiatives on an ad hoc basis. We look forward to working with you, and thank you for your willingness to be our partner in this endeavor. Now, we all know that the process of opening government is a continuing work in progress. As Steve Crowley noted when he was here last year, there is no open button that can be pushed to render the federal government more open overnight. Creating a more open government instead requires sustained commitment, a commitment that I have described here today, which has been demonstrated by the President as well as employees at all levels of government. The Open Government National Action Plan is but one more step in a process that has produced significant results over the last 3 years and that will continue under the President's leadership in many forms in the future. The collective progress made in the administration's first 3 years underscores its commitment to a transparent, accountable government. As exemplified by our continuing progress on foreign assistance transparency, the recent efforts are hardly the end of the administration's open government efforts. They are ongoing. Each new set of information made public in easy-to-read formats and each removal of arcane barriers to citizen participation is helping to restore the confidence of the American people in their government and also to improve its operation. A more democratic and effective government is one that truly improves the well-being of those whom government is supposed to serve. For, in the words of the President, openness will strengthen our democracy and promote efficiency and effectiveness in government. By making open government a high priority, the administration is working to improve the everyday lives of the American people more inclusively, more effectively, and more economically. We are all committed to meeting this challenge together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lisa. And for the few of you who would have any questions and want to come up to the mics in the aisle, I'll mention something that Lisa confided to me just a few minutes before she spoke, which is that she has spoken at a number of programs on this issue, but she's disappointed that she hasn't had sufficiently difficult questions. It was unclear to me whether she was saying that the questions she's received are insufficiently difficult or that she has had some but not enough of them.
Right.
So in either event, I ask you to bear in mind that. But before, I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the moderator and ask you just one question to start off, a leading softball-type question,
okay, which
should be easier than those tough ones that you may get from the audience. That is, a lot of people in the audience are concerned about the Freedom of Information Act and progress there. And you did speak of a number of procedural things like the dashboard and the OPM categories of FOIA officers and the like. But are you familiar with any substantive improvements, such as releasing more information through application of the foreseeable harm standard, withholding less information, and possibly even work on backlog reduction?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I can't speak on the details, but I do know that for the last fiscal year for which we have the data available, we have improved disclosures by 6% overall and cut back on the number of exemptions that are invoked by, I believe, overall 10% and around 20% on the discretionary exemptions. So that's something that we continue to talk about. Obviously, it's still a priority of the President on day one when he issued the FOIA memorandum, something that agencies are taking seriously, and it's a continuing work in progress.
Thank you. And let me turn you over to our first questioner on this side of the room, and I'll warn you, he never asks hard questions, but he does work for the Associated Press.
Hi, Richard Lardner from AP.
Hi.
My question is about what the administration is doing really to empower FOIA officers, because
mm-hmm.
the problem, at least that I run into with FOIA requests, is there are too often people who are just don't have the authority or feel like they have the authority to challenge a decision within the agency. They'll ask for documents. They'll be told, no, we don't have any. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you doing there? And also, what is the White House doing to make sure that agencies don't shortchange their FOIA offices in their budgets? Because it's all too easy to, you know, look for a place to cut. We'll cut the FOIA office because mm-hmm. who really cares about that?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for the question. Well, so one of the things that we highlight in the National Action Plan goes to your first question. And I believe it was discussed briefly on the professionalization of FOIA administration, and that is something that that we're taking seriously. I can read you the text on page 4. We will, and this is what we're working on right now, we will continue work on a new civil service personnel category or job series for officials who specialize in administering FOIA and other information programs. It is important to recognize the professional nature of the work done by those administering FOIA. So that is definitely a priority and something that we're working on and working to implement. And I know that Patrice mentioned that in her remarks earlier today, and Amy as well. I think Amy's here somewhere. We're in communication and working on that. With regard to your second question, that is, resources are always an issue, obviously. Budgets are being cut left and right, so that's something that agencies are dealing with on a wide range of issues. One of the things that I mentioned was the change in the GSA contract schedules. We hope will help that because it will identify where resources are available and allow agencies to take advantage of some of the some of those other resources. So that's something that we're looking into, and I'm happy to follow up with you with particulars about that afterwards.
Question over on this side of the room.
Nate Jones from the National Security Archive. Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your speech you're fighting excessive classification with the National Declassification Center, and that's very welcome. Mm-hmm. But from a lot of people in the openness community, even a bigger concern is the current overclassification still going on right now. And I know we did make that clear in our meetings with you. How come the plan doesn't do, I didn't hear anything, to address current overclassification?
Overclassification is an issue that we're well aware of and working on as well. The National Declassification Center is due for their annual, I believe it's a six-month report, Nick, their six-month report this week or next week, so I hope that we'll have more information then.
But all those records are over 25 years or older.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to follow up with you. I don't know the precise answer to that question. I'm happy to follow up afterwards.
I think his point for the follow-up later on offline is not just declassification of what has been classified in the past, but a question of classifying ab initio right up front,
yep,
at the front end of the process.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Question over on this side.
Hi, my name is Fabiola Rivas. I'm a third-year student here, and I wrote down my question. Has the White House been monitoring the controversy over the Justice Department's proposed regulation regarding the use of FOIA exclusions?
I'm sorry? I missed the first part of that.
Has the White House been monitoring the controversy over the Justice Department's proposed regulation regarding the use of FOIA exclusions? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't know personally about that.
Okay.
This
Thank
is
you.
Something that was raised earlier today having to mm-hmm. do with proposed Justice Department regulations mm-hmm. and controversy in a number of different ways.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, I should probably mention that if anyone wants to speak offline about that, I've not spoken publicly, but I can answer the question that was posed on that point this morning because I wrote the AG memo that addresses that back 25 years ago. And we can just leave it at that at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Question over here.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak to the lease question. I can't speak to the ongoing investigations. I can recommit to what we committed to do in the National Action Plan on whistleblower protection, which is that we committed to advocate for legislation on the Hill and work closely with Congress, and we are currently monitoring Hill progress on this issue very carefully. And if Congress is unwilling to act, we have stated publicly that the White House is willing to use executive action to try to act on its own.
Right. There's someone who couldn't be here today who asked the same question, believe it or not, of both Norm Eisen 2 years ago mm-hmm. and Steve Crowley last year. And he got similar answers, as a matter of fact. But the question was, okay, when you have an initiative, a new policy, and you're trying to implement and move things forward, you almost always hit something that's more challenging than you realized to begin with. And you wish you could call it an accomplishment, but it's been so challenging, you're not quite there yet. Is there anything that you can identify that has been most challenging, most difficult, where, gee, people in the White House, they sure thought they could get it done by now, but, you know, it takes more money or it takes more time to change the culture or it's just very difficult, it's intractable? Is there anything that comes to mind like that?
That's been most difficult?
A very, very difficult challenge.
Yeah, I think FOIA is one example of where you have an ingrained agency culture, and for administrations previous to ours, there was a presumption against disclosure, and so one of the, you know, one of the challenges when the president issued his FOIA memorandum on day one is changing agency culture, and that's something that we work hard to do every day, and that's why, as we have stated, open government, there's no button. You can't just press a button and make all of government more open, unfortunately. But we continue to work hard on that, and that's something that we're consider a priority.
Question on this side over here. You're keeping count. For those of you keeping score at home, yes, you were there first.
So my question concerns We the People and the annual report and the contents of that. One of the interesting statistics on We the People is that roughly only one in 1,000 people who are creating a petition are actually reaching the threshold. That's a little bit covered up in the way the statistics were presented because they raised the threshold from 5,000 to 25,000.
Excuse me, could you grab the mic there and just get a little bit closer? And turn the on button on if it's not on already. Huh. We were talking about pushing buttons before. There's no magic button for FOIA. There is one for that mic.
Okay. So I've got it. So the question is, why is there such a low success rate on these petitions, and what are the effects of it? One of the reasons is there have been a lot of technical glitches with the website. It's down a significant period of time. Now, I thought that would be fixed after 3 or 4 months, but my wife was just on yesterday, and it was down again.
Okay.
And you fill in the CAPTCHA. There's often people have lots of problems doing that. There's a lot of bugs with the interface. So there's been no public disclosure of these glitches. They're very significant. My wife had a We the People petition, and it was basically like 1 or 4 or 5 people that she got to go there were successful in doing it because there's a bunch of steps. So, but the question is, will there be any disclosure about some of the technical problems, the downtime on the website, and steps that you're taking to fix these problems? I know, I think it's Macon or something like that.
Yep, Macon.
Yeah, who's in charge of it. I've emailed him. I've written 3 op-eds about this in the Huffington Post. I know they're aware of it, but there hasn't really been any public attention to it. Now, will there be in the annual report?
I'm happy to talk to our new media team about what exactly is going to go into the report. I think with any platform of this it's so big as it is, I think that there are going to be glitches, and that was something that we anticipated going in, and so I know that his team have worked really, really hard to try to fix the technology glitches, and I apologize to you and to your wife for the
trouble. And just one last point, this 30-day limit.
Yeah.
The practical effect of that is it means there are only well-organized special interest groups with good databases can get to that in 30 days. For people that have to build a campaign, like an average citizen, like what, they just can't do it in 30 days. They need 6 months or more than 1 month. So the system is skewed to favor well-organized special interest groups, which undercuts, I think, the vision of We the People.
I will note that the requirement for us to respond to a petition is a certain number of signatures. With both of the petitions that were responded to today on records management, neither of them had come close to meeting the signature threshold. So we do respond to other petitions where the signature thresholds have not been met. Thank you.
Probably have time for probably just one more question.
One question.
Over on this side, that mic is probably working.
Gavin Baker, OMB Watch. Lisa, thanks for being here. Hopefully this will be a fairly easy question. Mm-hmm. So the Open Government Partnership is an international effort, and full credit to the Obama administration for its vision in setting that up, not just to reform domestic policies, but also to try to strengthen openness around the world. So OGP is about sharing knowledge and ideas between countries. Can you tell us about, one, what's the best lesson that we've learned through the OGP from other countries?
That's a great question. I think part of it is that we've been genuinely very pleased and happy with the enthusiasm that all of these other countries have come to this commitment with. We weren't quite sure when the president in 2010 announced the vision for this open government partnership, frankly, we just weren't sure how it was going to look. And with the help of the steering committee countries and the enthusiasm of Brazil and the UK and Mexico and the leadership of some of these other countries on these same issues has been really inspiring to me and to our national security team and to our whole open government team at the White House. We all learn from each other and are able to share best practices. And that's something we met a few months ago in Brasilia and are looking forward to the next meeting in April. And one of the key things that we've been able to share is the United States being one of the first 8 governments to launch our national action plan. One of the things that we've been able to do is to share best practices with other countries, and now moving forward to the implementation phase, that's something else that we're really looking forward to do, including learning from other countries on how to best implement our plans. So that's, I think, actually you speak very clearly to one of the biggest benefits of this open government partnership has been, you know, being able to be a leader but also learning from other countries and being inspired by other countries and their enthusiasm for these open government issues around the world.
And I can add a quick addendum to that, which is that one of the things we discussed at our annual program here at Washington College of Law to celebrate International Right to Know Day on September 28th, we had our 5th program doing that in September, is that the number of nations that have joined the international transparency community worldwide has now passed 85, and there's a very good basis for expecting that with the President Obama's leadership, that number will soon be up near or past 100 before you know it. So this is not just a matter of the U.S. transparency regime improving by learning things from outside the United States, but it's also restoring the U.S. leadership role, both to increase the implementation of existing laws, but also to proliferate further transparency laws, even in nations like China, for example, which, frankly, I never thought in my lifetime I would see openness in government there.
Yeah.
So President Obama gets high marks for that as well.
Well, thank you. And just to add to that, Dan, just one quick last final remark. But with regard to EITI, the Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, this was one of the reasons why the folks that work on EITI were so excited that it's a really big deal internationally that we're providing leadership and having committed to implementing EITI to provide an example for countries around the world as well.
Especially because it's after so many years in which the U.S.'s leadership role had, shall we say, diminished.
Yes. Okay. Thank you all.
Well, thank you very much again, Lisa. Not working.